The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, it's me, David Hayes, back in the hot seat here on a wonderful Thursday afternoon in Bloomington, Indiana. If you're listening from other areas in the country, because you can go to WGCLradio.com, go to iTunes, Google Play, subscribe to the podcast, and listen at your leisure. So I really appreciate this, you being the opportunity to sit here and also for you to be listening. We've had a fun week on Wall Street, maybe even a week and a half. We've got Hot Rod on in just a few minutes, but mainly I've been asked over and over and over, what do you think about the election? Well, once again, I just have history to go on, so I have a piece on politics and investing, a few things you might want to know or learn. And then obviously, we're going through some pretty rocky times from in a societal way, right? We have riots, we have people, you know, upset about a lot of things. Well, I went back and looked at some similarities between 1968 and today, and I'll go through that as well. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by my friend over at the Like Law Group, Lance Like. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Give him a call, 812-323-8300. And Dirk Bland at Kenny Bland Auctions, they are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Go online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And if you need a roof, do what I did. Give Steve's Roofing a call. Now, in full disclosure, I do have a relationship with Steve's Roofing. The owner is one of my very best friends, and my brother is their commercial estimator, and now my nephew does the residential sales. So, in full disclosure, I still say give them a call because they did a great job. And they did it at a very fair price. I don't know if it was a friends and family discount that I got, but anyway, I thought it was great. But I've always said, if you're going to get screwed by people you least love, right? So I don't think I did. I think based on what I've been told, I got a great deal. So they did a great job. So please give them a call at 812-824-3006. They're going to kill me for that one. All right. Plan for price increases. This is interesting because when we do retirement planning, we typically will put different inflation rates with different types of spending. If you're spending money on healthcare, it's around 5.1. Your basic living expenses at 2.2. And then your discretionary spending may be a little different because you can control that and you might, you know, spend more early on and less later on. But when you look at the past, going as of the end of August, the consumer price index is up almost 20% over the last 10 years. So basically, it took $1.20 to buy the same thing a dollar did 10 years ago. Up over the last 20 years, it's 50%. So it would take $2 to buy basically what $1 did back then. And over the last 30 years, it's up nearly 100%. This comes from the Department of Labor. So basically, you're going to have to double your income over the next 30 years to just pay for the same things you enjoy today. Lenders repossessed 2,035 homes in August of 2020, which I didn't know that was even possible based on some of the rules and regs around the country, but whatever. The all-time record for bankruptcy repos in a single month in history was in 2010. There was over 102,000 homes repossessed back in that day. Our fiscal year ends on September 30th. That's as the United States goes. This comes from the Office of Management and Budget. Completing the largest budget deficit in our nation's history. Through the end of August, our government budget deficit, that means more money spent than what we brought in, reached $3 trillion. I expect for it to be possibly even more if they get something done here in the next couple weeks. The previous red ink record was $1.4 trillion from the fiscal year of the financial crisis at the pit in 2009. 55 of the last 60 fiscal years in our country, that's 1961 through 2020, have resulted in outlays exceeding receipts. That means for 55 of the last 60 years, we've spent more than what we've brought in. I don't know about you, Rob, but that wouldn't go in my household. The five surplus years were 69, 98, 99, 2000, and 2001, the roaring 90s, right, into the tech world, where we had a lot of jobs, a lot of tax revenue, and things were feeling good. The average interest rate that the U.S. government pays on interest-bearing debt as of the end of August was 1.7%, and that's on everything. That's down from 2.3% in 2015. That means our government can actually borrow almost 30% more than it borrowed 5 years ago and still have the same out-of-pocket interest expense. That means things are, it kind of gives you the permission to borrow more in a way, and that's what's happening now. All right, you've been enjoying Monday Night Football. I did, and hopefully soon we'll start seeing people back in the stands. The first Monday Night Football game was the year I was born, 1970, 50 years ago. The Cleveland Browns met the New York Jets in a 31-21 victory. The TV broadcast team included Keith Jackson. And I believe he was the one that would say, oh, he had a saying, I forget what it is, Howard Cosell and Don Meredith. Jackson was replaced a year later by Frank Gifford. That comes from Sports Illustrated. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Man, that makes me think of my anniversary coming up on October 23rd. My wife and I, Misty, will have been married 27 years. And I would say 26 and a half of those have been fantastic, because I'd lie to you, just like you'd be lying to me if you said that every part of your marriage was fantastic. But it's been a pretty good ride. And we've been thinking about going somewhere, like somewhere nice and warm and whatever. And we just can't get our head around that process quite yet, which makes me reluctant to believe that our entire economy is just going to jump back to its feet once the virus has a vaccine. And I was with people again this morning who said, who I thought would jump right on, they said, well, we're not going to be the first ones to take it. So I've been trying to be realistic about things. The market's certainly starting to act a little more realistic about things. But Rod, here we are, you know, after things have just zoomed up, literally dragged by, you know, the big technology stocks. Then we saw a turbulent week of last week, and then we continue that into today, into this week. But, you know, I was telling Glass, this isn't all bad. Sometimes it's good to kind of have a reality check every so often.
Well, what I have found interesting, I have had this discussion with you and also Doug Hughes here around the office, that prior to this sell-off that started roughly 3 weeks ago, a little over 3 weeks, this is the fourth week that it's been going on. Prior to that, most of the business channels covering the market on a daily basis had been saying, the market has gotten ahead of itself. The market has gotten ahead of itself. Yes, we're recovering in the economy, but not at the same rate that the market seems to be recovering. We're due a pause. We're due a correction. Well, here we are. Yesterday, we closed on the S&P down about 9% off of the all-time high that we had hit here recently before this sell-off started. As of today, intraday, we actually touched down 10%. Now, that's a normal correction, 10%, which consistently happens in good years almost every year that you have a good year. Now, of course, this is an unusual year, so there is nothing consistent or normal about this year. But just in general, when we have good years, it's very common that you have one or two 10% corrections. So we get this correction that everybody in the media is talking about that is long overdue and much needed. And then all of a sudden, to them, it is this much worse? Is this the beginning of something extremely bad? What is going on? Why are we selling off? Well, holy cow. For a couple of months, you guys kept saying the market's ahead of itself. It needed a correction. You finally get a correction, and now all of a sudden, you're Chicken Little and the sky is falling.
Right.
So You know, we have made a huge amount of progress in the market off of those March lows that were set. We got up positive, I think even around 7% as a year-to-date number. Through yesterday's close, we're barely positive on the S&P. About 0.2% is all that we are positive on that. But the year's not over yet. And as Doug and I talked a little bit yesterday about this same topic here that we're discussing right now, you know, at the pace we were on, being up around 7%, if we just continue to move that direction into year end, we end up up 12, up 14, up 15%. And you have to stop and say, does it make sense in the middle of a pandemic with the economy still partially shut down to have a 15% positive equity market gain for that year? I would say probably not. So to me, this makes sense. A resetting evaluations. Let's slow this process and recovery down a little bit because the economic side of the recovery isn't moving as quickly as what the stock market side is.
Well, the other thing, Rod, when you have a cap-weighted index, and what that means, folks, is the bigger the company represented in the index is, the more weight it has in its pool. When you have those top, you know, handful of companies driving this thing up, because they're so big, they had a big influence on the underlying number of the S&P. But well, now as they've pulled back, they had a pretty big influence as well. So you have to keep things in perspective, because as you do, and I know we always do, we always pull the hood back and we're looking at the individual parts, not the index as a whole. Hey, Rod, I know this is a big, I mean, golly, I say every day, I'm gonna. That's an underestimation of how often I get asked about this. What do you think about the election? What happens if Biden wins? What happens if Trump wins? Well, a couple things about politics and investing, a few things that people should know. Number one, it takes a village. The president is only one factor of influence that makes the market go one way or the other. It's the macroeconomics, the interest rates, the inflation, economic outlooks, changes in policy, wars. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Now, they all might impact what happens in the market much more than the White House. And the other thing is, profits can be profits. Yeah, politics and policies impact the market, but business profitability is the number one gauge that you cannot ignore. Increase for demand goods and services boost the company's profits and ultimately prices, stock prices. So I would look to profitability to foreshadow whatever happens in the fall. And the other thing, and I've got more, but the Fed controls interest rates. Interest rates are another incredible underlying factor. You know, when you talk about interest rates at nearly zero, people start searching for things. And when they do, they take more risk, which drives up the market. And I'll say this before I move on, Rob, because I want your comments. Innovation. We saw this in our career a couple of different, three or four times. But innovation is an influencer. I mean, researchers actually found that the tech giants were more of a force in the market than the White House. The phone that I carry, the company that represents, stimulated the U.S. economy with 2 million jobs in its app economy alone. That's led to a creation of 1.5 million U.S. jobs and earnings, money in people's pocket, of $16 billion for U.S. people and developers. So whoever wins, I'm telling you that it's more than the president. It's profits that drive things. It's the Fed that controls interest rates. And innovation is a major influencer. So Hot Rod, you and I have been doing this now for 25 years. We've seen a lot. We've been through a few presidential runs. I'm just saying that it comes down to these things, and the U.S. always seems to find a way to make it happen.
Yeah, most certainly. And I say many times, the president can always make things a little bit better or a little bit worse. They set the policy direction. But a couple of things in regards to all the points you made, Dave. One, as you're alluding to, the legislation and the change in laws has to get written in Congress. So the president sets the agenda of what he would like to see, but he doesn't end up writing them. Well, if anybody's paid any attention to what's going on in Congress, they don't tend to get a whole heck of a lot done.
No.
So don't expect massive changes out of Congress and the legislation. But bigger picture, let's assume they're going to make some changes. Broad economy, about the only change that they can make that has broad economy implications, and I'm not talking about into individual sectors or subsectors underneath some of those sectors, is tax changes.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody assumes that if Biden wins, he's going to increase corporate taxes. Okay, he has talked about that. He may do that. Does that wipe out all of your profits? No, it doesn't. It shrinks your margin a little bit, but, you know, we're talking about a 20% corporate tax, maybe going up to 28%. I'm not saying it's the right number. It's an okay number. My point is it's an 8% increase on the taxes, but that is not a 100% depletion of revenue and earnings that the companies are making. So, yes, that supply and demand, which is part of what you were alluding to from the standpoint of what's going to drive these companies in the economy, if people still want to own the product and they have a job and money in their pocket, they're going to buy that product regardless of whether corporate taxes are at 28% or 20%. Now, we have seen in the past that very short-term, the political rhetoric may have a negative impact on certain sectors or subsectors. Mm-hmm. Pharmaceutical drug pricing would be the easiest, greatest example of that. But what has ever come out of that other than political speeches hammering on the pharmaceutical companies to stop gouging their customers and raising the prices to exorbitant levels? Well, nothing. We never have had any legislation that has changed any of that. Maybe they browbeat them into not increasing the prices as much as they would have, but from a legislation perspective, they never did anything, which is why the market normally has a mini sell-off whenever there's heavy political rhetoric around a topic like that. But then it bounces back to the realization that, you know what, Congress rarely gets anything done that has a true impact, good or bad, throughout the economy. So, yes, I think we're making too much out of it. In the short run, could it cause some volatility around the short run and people trying to figure out maybe this sector is better suited for this president over that sector? Yeah, potentially. But longer term, earnings and revenue, which is what drives the companies and should drive the stock price and the decision as to whether or not it is a good value to buy at that price or not, will have minimal impact on those numbers based on who wins this election.
It's funny, Rod, because people listening, they probably think that we actually talk before the show. We don't talk before the show. We just go with it because we know what we're talking about. And it's funny because the last two points that I was going to make that I held up on, and you made them perfect, was policy changes take time. You know, it has to pass through the House, the Senate, signed by the president before it becomes a law. That could take well over a year. And then the last thing was history speaks, because election cycles, especially recent ones, are just full of misrepresentations, personal bias, bad information. Dire prediction that a candidate's policies will kill the market in a particular sector. You mentioned that, but they're usually wrong. As an example, when Obama's health care law passed, it was expected to kill the health care sector. But then health care stocks sold off in the short run. But in reality, the healthcare law created a set of winners and losers within the sector, and astute investors like you, Rod, were able to capitalize on it. So, Rod, great job as always. We'll listen to you on Friday afternoon on Big Show Friday on Glass in the Afternoon.
I appreciate it, Dave. You have a great rest of your show, and I will talk to you later.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I always say quick break. Are they pretty quick, like 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes long? I just assume they are. Anything under five to me is quick. Similarity. Thankfully, I was born with some kind of a filter. Not a very good filter, but a little bit of a filter. So anyway, I pause and they have this big red button over here that can dump me if they have to. But I want to talk about similarities from 1968 and today when we come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back. You know, Rod and I did not talk about this, but last week I was listening to him on Glass in the Afternoon on a Monday, and Glass asked the question, does the economy matter the most when it comes to a president being reelected? Well, number one, there's nothing more powerful than an incumbency. You've got to take that first into consideration. There's nothing more powerful than an incumbent, because you have to make a decision to fire that person because they're doing a bad job, in your opinion, or, you know, you have other reasons like a bad economy or certain outcomes that are bad for you to get rid of them. And that's why, you know, even our local elections, I always find it interesting when someone goes in and votes straight ticket and they don't even know these people and you're firing an incumbent because they just have a different letter at the end of their name. I'm just saying that when you go back and look at presidential elections, that's not the case. It's nearly 100% driven on the economy. 100%. I went back and looked at when JFK was brought into office, 61 to 63, and then LBJ. And then we had a flip because we started to see things go, you know, bad there in the 60s, and we had the Vietnam War as well, but that was a big influence, but I still once again argue it's the economy. And then Richard Nixon comes in, and then Gerald Ford. I mean, so you can go through the cycle and say, yeah, it's the economy. So that's why, you know, I'm not a prophet, I'm not a predictor of outcomes, but everyone that I talk to says no change. And to me, no change is good change because I like the market to be stable. And like I said, it's not for me about being red or blue. It's about the green because that's what I'm responsible for, is helping people navigate the green, which is the money. But when you look at the similarities, which is what I wanted to do, from 1968 to today, in 1968, there was an influenza outbreak that killed 100,000 people or more. We had protests, civil unrest, riots. I mean, students protest. We had, you know, war going on. And Nixon was elected as the, quote, law and order president. We had fundamental fiscal policy change at the time. What do you think is happening right now? In fact, that's when we moved off of the gold standard for good. That pushed us into a long period of stagflation, wages flat, prices up, which caused inflation, right? We had major inflation. That's really why Jimmy Carter got fired, because high unemployment, high inflation, you know, economy stunk, and here came in Ronald Reagan. And then, of course, Reagan's era, it was good all the way to the end, so guess who got the job? George W. Bush. Well, guess what happened? At the end of 93, we were in a recession, and here came Bill Clinton. We had a really good run in the economy. And then when he was done, then George, and actually, if you look at 2000, remember, Clinton was 2000, 2001, right? Things were headed down fast and furious during the tech bubble bursting. Well, guess who came along? George W. Bush. Then, you know, he gets us through wartime and economy. That's really what drives things. Typically, a president does not get fired during wartime or a good economy. Then we had Obama come in. We had his time. And, of course, we had the Great Recession that we pulled out of during that period of time. And then we had what really is a global initiative of just having someone that's not, you know, political get the job. And that's what happened, in my opinion. So there were a lot of similarities between 1968 and where we are today. So I just wanted to give people the confidence to let them know that, yeah, things don't seem to be going very well. But we'll get through it, and we always have, and we always will. And I don't want people to be angry. I don't want people to feel a certain way for somebody else. I don't want people to tear up things and burn things down. I just want people to, you know, listen, understand, get the facts, ask questions, you know, and get along. And eventually we will. And we've had some periods, some long periods of time where things have gone just fine. But we have these periods, and we're in one of them, where I don't know if some of it was influenced by the shutdown, the pandemic. I think it has. But it was time. And sometimes when these times happen, it does make for some conversation and for some positive change. But it can also make for some bad changes, too. So I just wanted, again, to back up and say, 1968, I wasn't even born yet. And I look at today, and I'm like, wow, 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 wow. So just giving you a little history lesson of the day. All right, when we come back, I've been following, you know, the podcast of David McKnight, who's been on the program, Tom Hegna, who's obviously been on the program, has written many, many books, top-level economist. And last week, we talked about some of the pillars of having a successful retirement. Well, it's interesting because I'm talking about it, McKnight's talking about it, and yeah, Hegna's talking about it, and what's interesting is they all seem to sound very similar. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. back, everyone. You know, I had a whole lot more on why 1968 and 2020 feel so similar. There's a Washington Post article that came out June 4th, and I'd encourage you to Google that, but it talked about the riots and destruction, racial tensions, pandemic, law and order president campaign, images from space so beautiful and so far away that people on Earth wish they could escape there too. All of that happened in 1968, one of the craziest years in U.S. history. And it feels like it was happening all again in 2020. So give that article a look, a Washington Post article on why 1968 and 2020 seem so much the same. So last week, I was talking about surprisingly valuable assets for a happy retirement. If you want to live a long and fulfilling retirement, get your mind off the money and into seven valuable assets. So we talked about good health, staying connected socially, having a purpose in life, finding that purpose, keeping yourself on top of things, educating, optimism, gratitude, and walking your dog will make you happy. I love that one, and I've had actually more than one person comment about how they do this every day. They get up and walk their dog. Many of them will then exercise. Many will then connect with their friends, and I think having that purpose is really important. But then, you know, that came from Tom Hegna. Well, then I talk about, you know, faith, family, friends, and a fixed income stream. Once again, getting your mind off of the money and focusing on your faith, your family, your friends, and that's a secret to a happy retirement. I've been saying that for years. But then I get on to David McKnight's podcast to catch up, and he's like, he called it the Grand Unified Theory on a Happy Retirement. And the bottom line, it comes down to the same stuff. The income, all of the things that I mentioned before and more. So if you want to catch Dave's podcast, I think it was around 16 minutes long as I look at it right now. It was part two, but get on there, subscribe to his podcast as well as mine. And Hegna's fun to listen to. He's a little crazy. Wears an orange suit around all the time, but he's a cool guy and has a lot to talk about. But yeah, I mean, when you get down to it, what are the secrets to a happy retirement? And I think a lot of that will lead me into my next segment, which is just the power of positive thinking. I think through this whole crazy, messed up time, going back to the middle of March, when I'm sitting on a video talking about what's happening, and we get it out to thousands of people. My video was terrible. I looked mad, which I was. And I was on the verge of thinking, I cannot go on spring break. In fact, there's no way I can go. I know I have to stay here at the helm of the ship. Well, here's what happened. And I probably have told this story already before, but not everyone listens to every show. That Friday before spring break, everything seemed to be going good. Like the numbers were coming in better. The market was up that day. And I told Misty, yep, let's go. So we took off for Aruba for spring break. By Wednesday, the wheels have completely fallen off the bus. And I had my computer, thankfully, with me. And I'm up in the morning early doing some research on the math of recovery. Do a video from Aruba. No one saw I was in Aruba. I was actually in my hotel room. I didn't want people to see me sitting there with an ocean behind me and then miserably locked down at home, which we really weren't locked down yet at that point. So we were then worried, are we ever going to get out of here? And I'm like, yeah, we're going to get out of here. I'll swim back if I have to. We're only, you know, near South America. I mean, that's not a problem, right? So anyway, thankfully we got out of there fine. We get back. We closed on a house on that Monday for my son to live in Indy. And that was pretty much the beginning of the end. Well, as far as doing things, getting out, doing anything. So I really worked for the next 2 months in doing nothing but coaching people up. All I wanted to do was make people feel better, make sure they understood that things are going to be okay. And I mean, I love doing it because that's kind of my nature, but it absolutely wore me out. So here I now am coaching people into retirement. And some people are doing it because they think they need to do it, want to do it, or some people are somewhat being forced to do it. So you have to answer the question, when you have enough money to retire, and I had lunch with a good friend of mine this week and said, why do you work beyond the paycheck? And think about that really hard. And once you come up with the reasons you work, and maybe it is for the paycheck. If it's for the paycheck, get the heck out. But if it's for other purposes and other reasons, think about that. and then try to duplicate the same things that you love about work beyond the paycheck in retirement. I can't give you all the answers, but I can certainly, you know, coach you through it. The other thing I tell people is never underestimate association. You must stay around positive thinking people, people that you look forward to talking to, that you look forward to hanging out with, you look forward to hearing what they have to say. Never underestimate that. If you hang around woe is me people, they'll drag you down because optimism is contagious. Do what you say, show up when you said you're going to show up, treat everyone the same. That was my mom's motto, and I still live by that today. Random acts of kindness. You remember, it's more blessed to give than receive, and random acts of kindness are that way. If you randomly call someone, randomly do something for someone, just out of nowhere, and that will make you feel great, and that will obviously transition into the power of positive thinking. We've all been through a lot, me included. Like my son Will, he's struggling, man. He's tugging along up there in Indy. We've been worried about his mental state. He sometimes ignores calls and texts. But sometimes, this is something really important. Sometimes we ignore those who are closest to us. Sometimes we're meaner to people that are close to us. Remember that and do something about it. Be intentional about calling your son, calling your daughter, calling your mother, you know, because sometimes your wife, your husband, you know, sometimes we ignore those that are closest to us, and sometimes we'll do things for other people, and I don't know why that is. Is it for the optics that, hey, look how great of a guy I am, or is it just that we take people for granted? And I think it's probably more the latter, we take people for granted, because a hand up is better than a handout, and if you can create a legacy of goodness and kindness and generosity, that will be super contagious and super powerful, because family legacy is pretty cool. Leaving a last name that means something. Think about that. How can you leave a last name that means something? Not just to the people of the next generation, but forever, you know, and that's really important. And I think that's the power of positive thinking that you need, that we all need, to continue to slog through this thing. Sounds like the state of Indiana is going to number 5, which I assume means, you know, everyone can go back to normal, but everyone's not going to. And I'm sure our city's not going to with the university. It's too much risk to, I think, but I don't have an opinion on that. It's just me speculating. Things will not go back to normal quickly. But regardless, you can have your own mindset, your own mental state, and the state of mind is the it's the strongest of all. So keep it up. Keep your head up. All right, we'll be back. We're going to wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. And you want to know why I wanted to be a math teacher and a football coach. Now you wonder why. I miss youth football, man. I didn't always look forward to it, but once I was in the middle of it, I enjoyed it. And always trying to find those few kids that needed your help the most, so it was always very rewarding. I actually, interestingly enough, ran into a former player who is the manager of the Kroger on the west side. Now, granted, he's 44 years old. I'm 50. It was in my very first year of coaching at Edgewood, which I did exactly what my high school football coach said. When I said to him, I want to be a math teacher and football coach, he says, go up to Greenville, play football, and you'll figure it out. And that's what happened. You know, went out to play football and decided that I learned about money, and I learned about how to manage money and handle money, and I wanted to teach other people how to do it. So that's been my mission for not many kids that are 19 or 20 have any idea what they're doing. I have one myself that's up in Indy that doesn't know what he wants to do. That's okay. But when you think about it, it's like, yeah, now it makes sense. And when you hear me talk about positive attitude and, you know, teamwork and how important that is and family and friends, I mean, you can understand why I wanted to be one. Well, the thing I wanted to do lastly is give you a little update on my book. I've been working really hard on it, and it's going to getting closer and closer and closer. Now, originally, I had focused on creating a book that was around my football playing and coaching days. I mean, I call it 2025, The Final Drive. It's a metaphor. in that direction. It's an attempt to emphasize the importance of last chance, time is ticking, now's the time to go. I was sitting with my CPA this week, and he said, hey, I heard your commercial about your proprietary process, the ECC, and how important it was to realize we're in the low tax environment now, and we should pay it off now and not pay it later at this unknown higher rate. And this is my CPA. And he said, you know, I just never really thought of it that way, but I'm looking at my mother-in-law who has money in retirement accounts, and she's in a very low tax bracket, and ultimately my wife's going to inherit this, so we need to do that for her. I'm like, exactly. This isn't all about you. In fact, it's very little about you. It's more about your surviving spouse and your kids. Because remember, whenever one spouse dies, two things happen. You're going to lose a check. At least a Social Security check goes, maybe even part of a pension. And your taxes double. Now I need more money to live on. And oh, by the way, I have to pay double the tax. Now you say, why did your taxes double? Because everything gets cut in half. Your deductions get cut in half. All your brackets get cut in half. So you might have been in a 12% bracket, now you're in 24, just because the bracket's shifted down and now you need more money. So that's that. And then also, yeah, I'm sitting here, not really spending any money, you know, have a bunch of money in an IRA or 401k. Why would you not transfer that over to Roth for the benefit of your kids or grandkids? Because once you pass away, it all goes to them. They can keep it in an inherited IRA and they have 10 years to take it out. They could literally leave it there for 10 years, grow tax-free, more than maybe double it if they're in a good market. And that's wonderful, right? It won't affect their income at all because that's always been the issue. So I'm trying to continue to motivate this, but here's the thing about the book. I also had not only this, you know, this whole narrative of where we are today, where we're likely to go based on government numbers. If you don't think that's possible, simply look in the past. If you don't know history, it's deemed to repeat itself on taxes and then what to do about it, right? So we have this is the part of why I do what I do, and then you get into their heads and you're like, here's why you need to make it, you need to do something, and then how do you do it? So we get into all kinds of different things. Well, then I also threw in longevity risk, which you guys have heard me talk about, that longevity risk is the ultimate risk. Longevity risk is a risk multiplier because the longer you live, a lot of things can go right, but a lot of things can go wrong. Higher taxes on your retirement accounts, inflation eroding your purchasing power, chances of another stock market crash destroying your savings, or a long-term care need that takes everything you save. So I'm just saying it takes a lot to plan for a 40-year retirement. So I was writing about that as well and also about sequence risk, retiring in a bad market. But I kept thinking that doesn't point to the title 2025, the final drive, because to me, that's what it's all about. So I'm going to pretty much not even go down that road, at least of sequence risk, which is shortening my book up a little, which is shortening the time for it to get done, which gives me excitement and joy. So that's where we are in the book. And I'm encouraged by the progress. I'm encouraged by everyone listening who asked me about it when they say, how's the book coming? Well, that's a motivator for me. And that's why I always say not just visualize things, verbalize things. I can visualize anything. I can visualize, you know, tremendous success. I can visualize a great, healthy, you know, life. I can visualize success for my son and a good spouse that he'll have someday. I can visualize all of that. But to verbalize it makes it even more powerful. So that's me. That's where I am today. And I am headed to tonight, Thursday night, to beautiful West Boggs Park in Ligoti, Indiana, where back in the day I would do a live show Saturday mornings with Jim Inman anchoring down the desk here and me calling from the top of the shelter house at 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning. So I'm grateful for the fact that Saturday morning at 9 a.m. I'll be having a wet line in the water, hopefully catching a big old bunch of fish. So that's what I'm going to do this weekend. I hope you guys have a great one as well. It's been fun as always. And when I get back next week, I'll be back live in the studio on Thursday. And, you know, we're going to have just another good show. And you can tell the content has been a little on the weaker side. And the motivation side has what's really driven this. Now, I promise next week I'm going to get back to a little heavier content. But I just had the last couple of weeks on my heart that I think people need to hear some things. And that's what I've been here to do. So I hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. I don't know if I'm over or under, but if you hear a bunch of music at the end, that means I was I was overtime. If you hear no music at the end, that means I was overtime. So either way, it's going to be a great weekend, like mid-70s, I think, maybe low 80s, and at night, 50 to 60 degrees. Great camping weather, great fishing weather, great just doing anything weather. So hey, everyone, have a great weekend. I'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.